Hi there, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the Becker's Healthcare Podcast Series. This is Mackenzie Bean, Managing Editor with Becker's Hospital Review. Today, I am so pleased to be joined by David Hargraves, Senior Vice President of Supply Chain at Premier, to discuss coexisting with COVID, lessons learned to fortify your supply chain. David has more than 25 years of leadership experience, including more than 15 years in supply chain, and we're really looking forward to tapping into some of that wisdom and industry knowledge today. So David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Mackenzie, thank you so much. It's an honor. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. So I thought a good place to start the discussion would just be to look at how COVID-19 has affected the healthcare supply chain. As we know, it's impacted it in a lot of ways, but I'm curious to hear from you, what would you say are some of the most surprising elements that you've seen in terms of COVID-19 and the healthcare supply chain?
It's a great question, Mackenzie, and I appreciate it very much. If you take a look at the impact's been substantial, but your question, the surprising elements, I think I'd probably narrow it down to just a few to talk about. One is the size and scale of the pandemic itself and the resulting increase in global demand for critical supplies. That's one. You know, a subtext on that is the response of some of our global trade partners early in the pandemic. But more importantly, another subject in here is the incredible acts of collaboration and compassion from all industries that came together to help our providers deal with COVID-19, including the collaboration between the private sector and the government. And probably the third one then is, you know, it was surprising to see the rapid development of technology solutions designed to help predict surges and forecast necessary supplies and staffing. So those are really, I'd say, the three most surprising elements. And if I can, I could give you a few examples of each one of those.
That would be great.
And I'd like to start, though, for all the listeners to say, I want to underline the fact that all of Premier's actions in this area have been designed to and intended to unburden our members, to protect our members, and to remove barriers from them so that they can focus on the patient care. That really is all throughout COVID what our focus has been. So if we look at a couple of those ones, the first one I mentioned was really the size and the scale of the pandemic and the resulting increase in global demand. So supply chain has always faced spot shortages in the past. There was something you can't prevent the shortages from happening. You can prevent and lessen some of the impact, but no one could have been fully prepared for a global pandemic of this nature and scale. We saw, depending on the category, the product itself, from a 7x to a 30x global surge in demand for some of these most critical products. And when that global surge in demand happened, in many of the COVID hotspots around our country, on-hand supplies dwindled from maybe 2 weeks of inventory for some of the critical PPE back in February to just 1 or 2 days in March. So that really, it reached the critical situation, and Premier then, on behalf of our members, had to deploy a number of strategies to really help them through that. And again, but the root of it was this sudden and dramatic increase in global demand from it. So we got with our members, as we always do, collaborated with them. We implemented a range of strategies to help them obtain products and accelerate the access to those products. We did direct sourcing work, forward buys. We created some special distribution arrangements, some other non-traditional partnerships to do it. A couple of those to highlight. We developed an expedited sourcing process. There were literally thousands of solicitations of companies offering to provide relief, provide supplies to our memberships, but they needed to be properly vetted to ensure that they were not fraudulent, to make sure the products weren't counterfeit. And so we stood up a team, worked through this expedited supplier sourcing process, got over 100 new contracts implemented in rapid time to make those available to our members during this time. And then again, to ensure the safe supply. The fact that we have such a collaborative nature with our members, it also helped us to work with our contracted manufacturers to ramp up their production. So we had many of our manufacturers able to more than double or triple the historic demands for the products and really increase that production. And again, the demand were at such unprecedented levels, it was needed to do. So our contracted suppliers and some of the PPE increased production by 214%. Our sourcing and production in some category up by over 1,000% in order to deliver on those needs. Those are in areas, again, the PPE, we're talking masks and gowns and gloves, which are all been reported along a lot throughout this crisis. One you don't hear about so much, though, is the critical drugs that were needed as well. So we did an analysis. We looked at 10 critical drugs that were in or approaching shortage in this past spring. And the pandemic caused demand for those products to surge again. Those surged by a little over 150%. But Premier had stood up a few years ago, Provide GX, which is a program we have to bring shortage drugs back to market. And we are proud to say that our members who participated in that program, despite that increase in demand for those drugs there, our members saw no interruption in their fill rates, and they were able to supply it. So those, as it relates to sort of the global demand and then the products themselves, those are a few of the reactions, those surprising elements and how we're able to solve it. I did mention, though, also the collaborative nature that really America stepped forward with to help our members through this. So during this experience, you know, the healthcare industry cut through red tape, partnered across competitive boundaries, and really worked to get things done in an expeditious way. At Premier, one of the decisions we made is instead of hoarding data, instead of hoarding product, we looked outwards. We tried to share with anyone we could in order to help our communities. So some examples of that, I mentioned some surprising elements from our global trade partners. When it looked like there might be difficulty getting some critical products out of Asia, we collaborated with an international airline to help load planes and deliver them to American soil on behalf of our members so that we could ensure that timely delivery of essential supplies to our members. We used our own domestic logistics and warehousing capabilities to assemble and distribute critical PPE supplies that had been donated to our members through some great American companies. There was really some great stories there about American companies in other industries that retooled their production lines to create some of the PPE products during that period of high demand. So that was just another great area, great acts of compassion and collaboration to produce those when our members needed it the most. And then that last one, just to round out your question, the surprising elements, one of the ones was this rapid development of cutting edge technology. So as the pandemic took shape, it was clear that some of the longstanding practices in healthcare supply chain weren't able to adapt to these sudden surges, these sudden spikes in demand in hotspots around the country. So we rolled out a COVID-19 early detection application, which used artificial intelligence to predict the case surge. And then we updated an existing interactive crisis forecasting and planning tool that would help predict the hospital's COVID-19 census and then prioritize the supply and adjust the therapies. And so by using that localized data to identify some trends, where COVID-19 cases were expected to increase by county, by facility, that enabled us to work with our members to predict the surge and then forecast the necessary supplies, the necessary staffing, 7 to 14 days in advance. And so really that rapid development of the technology really, really was helpful to go through this once you had the pandemic and being able to better prepare and pre-stage some of those supplies. So fantastic question. Again, I appreciate it very much. Those are some of those most surprising elements, I believe.
Of course, and I really appreciate you outlining some of those elements. And I like especially what you said, you know, just about that immense amount of collaboration that we've seen since the pandemic started, not only in the U.S., but globally, private, you know, public partnerships. So I want to stick with that a little bit and explore that more. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the unique or maybe non-traditional partnerships that you've created during the pandemic?
I can. I'd be happy to. Again, it was one of the most exhilarating, if you will. You know, this pandemic for all of our healthcare providers has been exhausting, but also exhilarating when you really saw some of the new partnerships that were formed. I'll probably hit on a couple. You hear a lot nowadays about a focus on domestic manufacturing. Premier really led the way with that. We've had a company, Prestige Ameritech, a Texas-based manufacturer of PPE products, been on contract with Premier for quite a long time. So what we did early in the pandemic, when it was clear that some PPE supplies could be challenged, we worked with 15 of our member health systems, and we purchased a minority stake in Prestige Ameritech the largest domestic producer of face masks and other PPE. And we did that with the intent both to secure supply for our membership, but also to infuse some much needed capital into that company so that they could continue their valuable mission of producing these domestic PPE. So that was one really important, and again, very early on in the pandemic that we made that move. Not all of it required, you know, direct ownership and an equity investment, though. Another one we did was the creation of an online exchange. We worked in partnership with a company called Resilink and with Stanford University, and we created an online exchange to trade PPE supplies between member hospitals. You know, it happens that as folks were ordering in the supplies, maybe they had an excess of one size, but were short on another. Maybe they had a few more ventilators that they needed than they needed, but they had a shortage of a different PPE product. So we got more than 1,000 hospitals participating with about 5 million products on the exchange. And so if I give you just one example, so one of our members had been looking for some testing swabs and was exploring 3D printing. And then when some swabs showed up on the exchange with Resilink, Premier's field team, the members that are embedded with our healthcare providers, they were able to make an immediate connection through the exchange and get those much needed supplies. So again, that use of technology to handle some of the supply demand imbalance. One other, and this is really a non-traditional one, one of the other ones though also was bridging this gap between the public and private sectors. So Susan DeVore, our CEO and Premier, created and led a public-private sector supply chain coalition. And the idea here was to drive supply chain coordination and get vital products to the healthcare providers and patients. So this was a group of all of the key leaders in supply chain and in manufacturing in the US and the government getting together very, very frequently, providing intelligence on what were the shortage products, showing where the demand was coming from the providers, but also offering as a group recommendations for regulatory changes and organize that around programs such as the one we created for the ventilator exchange to do it. So we worked really with the government, all the major leaders in this healthcare sector, and it was just fantastic to see everyone move forward with the single goal of protecting our healthcare providers so that they could take care of their patients. Along the way, in that same area of these non-traditional partnerships, we were working with and trying to help educate the White House, HHS, FEMA, the CDC, on how to get much needed products to the frontline workers and to the patients, and also doing our work in advocacy to make sure that there were some sensible policy improvements along the way, again, that could sort of clear through some of the red tape and make it easier to get the supplies to the healthcare providers. And then finally, I mentioned this a little bit, but the adjacent industries, the American industries that stepped forward to help out was just remarkable to see. We helped some of those companies with sourcing of the raw materials. We helped them to secure government approvals to help with their supply production. And you know some of these examples I've seen, right? Connecting distilleries to our contracted suppliers for some key ingredients in hand sanitizer to expedite the efforts to get hand sanitizer out. Small businesses sewing masks and gowns. The use of 3D printing with some of our members for the creation of the nasopharyngeal swabs that were important for the COVID testing. I mentioned already the work we did with a major airline to bring products out of Asia and to get them here. And one very large US-based company donated hundreds of thousands of high-quality face masks out to our members. And we were able to coordinate both the delivery of those logistically, but also get them to the areas where they were most needed, most in demand. So it's really, those are all some of the ones, and I know there's a lot that I'm missing as well inside here, but taking all of that, working with the government, the private sector, and then leveraging our data wherever we could to understand the pandemic's impact, its progress, where we expected the surges to be, and then try to get those supplies out in front. All of that occurred rapid fire throughout of it, and I do think it helped lessen the impact of the pandemic for the U.S.
Yeah, and I think it's clear by some of those examples you explained that the pandemic really has forced the healthcare industry to sort of rethink or adapt many processes that will likely have a lasting impact on know, how we do business, how we live our life, how we provide care. So I'm curious, from your perspective, what barriers do you think COVID-19 has sort of broken down that might be beneficial moving forward?
I appreciate it. You know, I'll talk about barriers I think that were broken down, but it's also, you know, we exercise some muscles we didn't know that we had along the way. And I'm saying we, the healthcare supply chain industry, not Premier specifically. So let's think about it, right? The underlying portion, again, was this surge in global demand. So that was one of the things first that was, it wasn't U.S. demand. It was global demand that really increased. So if I look at some of the biggest takeaways, we have long been a proponent, Premier, of having a more sophisticated and a more resilient supply chain. We've been able to endure smaller disruptions, but you have to be prepared for these large-scale pandemics as well. Part of that, if you will, underlying it, is there was and continues to be a lack of accurate demand signaling. Okay? It's okay to have just-in-time inventory, so long as you have an accurate view of your demand, and you can build a resilient supply chain to be able to handle those surges. So prior to COVID, we worked with a couple other industry trade organizations, HIDA and SMI, on an industry standard product disruption communication template. And the idea here was, if you could get even some standard communications in that, then all stakeholders could have consistent information during times of disruption. One of the other things that we did to break down a barrier is, if we agree with the premise that you have to have a more resilient supply chain, one of the things you have to do is take a look at all of the critical products that a hospital needs to operate and determine which of those are critical to operations, which of those might have a potential risk to them of being less resilient. So Premier, we looked across about 600 different categories of spend, and we created a centralized comprehensive tool, and we now have a better visibility into the abilities and the capabilities of our contracted manufacturers and distributors to fulfill current orders. When we did that, and we took a more total view, total visibility into the supply chain, then we could identify those few categories that really needed a more structural change to those. And our work there in supply chain resiliency continues this year and will continue in years to come. Some of those would be in where you have an over concentration in one geographic region. That's a potential barrier to supply chain resiliency. So we're working to move and make sure that our manufacturers have manufacturing locations in multiple countries, not just all concentrated in one. We're working on an improved emphasis on identification of the upstream raw materials. Now, one that Premier has been a long advocate for is on the APIs, the active pharmaceutical ingredients in many critical drugs, is getting and working with the government, working with our manufacturers to get better visibility into the sources of those raw material. Our goal here is to have enable our suppliers to give that greater transparency to the raw materials, their sterilization, their packaging locations, to help our supply chain professionals identify those gaps and then alter the purchasing patterns where necessary. So the work inside here, if I look at those barriers, you've got a renewed interest in domestic sourcing or national efforts to reduce these product disruptions, increase the visibility to the upstream production and the sources of raw materials. And so I think that those barriers in the past, where maybe a manufacturer wanted to protect some of that information, I think now you see a greater willingness to be transparent and a greater willingness on behalf of companies like Premier and our members to invest and ensure that you have a more resilient supply chain. The investment that we did again with Prestige Ameritech, one example, not the only one inside there. But through all these new connections we made, all these various efforts that we've been able to forge during COVID, they're going to overall improve how we get products, technology, and intelligence out to our healthcare providers. And again, with the intent that we reinforce and we unburden them so that they can focus on that delivery of the quality care.
Absolutely. Well, I also want to just be cognizant of you know, where we are right now in the pandemic, we're seeing cases rising, nearly nationwide. Many are concerned about a potential twindemic in terms of COVID-19 and the flu. So I'm curious, what are you seeing in terms of preparation for a potential second wave this fall?
Great question. So I'd say the preparation for a potential second wave started, of course, during the first wave. We took a long view and our members took a long view, knowing that this pandemic was an opportunity to really assess the long-term preparedness. So good news is the country is better prepared for a second wave than it was at the beginning of the first. That's clear. Care has improved dramatically. Providers have learned more about the condition. They've developed better treatment. As I mentioned before, there are new technologies that are available as well. But I won't say that we're fully prepared. Stockpiles have been built, but aren't necessarily fully built. Without some continued careful planning, without a strategic approach to managing the resources, a very heavy increase in cases could once again throw the healthcare system into a state of crisis. There are a couple key products, which again have gotten better, but we are monitoring closely and have the potential to go into a shortage again. So, you know, with Premier, our approach is always to collaborate with our members, to work with them, and to assess the work that we're doing in preparedness. So we surveyed members across the country, and we had actually just released some findings earlier this week. And the question was, an analysis of the most effective strategies being deployed at a state level to help with preparedness for the potential of a second wave. So if you look at some of those survey results, again, these are our members inside here, the sort of top measures that they're deploying right now within the states, I could probably summarize it in four areas. One is increased testing. That's been consistent throughout here. Increased testing, vitally important, and the number one thing that a lot of our members are doing to help with preparedness. But along with that, better reporting and better tracking processes. Improved contact tracing. So when your increased testing does reveal a positive case, being able to get to the contact tracing and notify the other folks. And then that, of course, is tied to the work the states are doing, providing clearer guidelines for opening or closing businesses, schools, other public sites. So you see a lot of focus around the testing, the reporting, the tracing, and all of that tying into, well, how should now those public meeting spaces be handled? So preparedness going into a second wave, it's going to require a strategic approach. You take these foundational principles of cooperation, coordination, communication, and if you do those, it is helping folks prepare. And again, also, while the supply situation is improving, but there are still a few that are in a critical situation. Our members tell us, and we work with them, that, you know, they've got to be prepared. They've got to have an operational plan, a financial plan. They are ready to adapt on a moment's notice. They know that their mission of the high quality, safe patient care has to be handled. And so we've done a lot of work with our members there, and they're definitely better prepared. One thing, I think you used the word twindemic. You know, it's important to note, as you get into flu season and you have the potential for, you know, the COVID to come out, and you have the release of the vaccine, one of the supplies we're keeping a close eye on is needles and syringes and related products that are done inside there. We just did a call with a lot of our members yesterday discussing some of the flu vaccine, and all the lead indicators show that our providers and their supply chain stakeholders are doing the right measures to be prepared around vaccines. Manufacturers are distributing some of the flu vaccines back at the end of the summer. We expect the rate of flu vaccines administered to rise this year. And we've done a lot of work, again, this theme of collaborating with manufacturers, suppliers, federal agencies to help the healthcare providers prepare for the increased number of syringes that they're going to need this year. Just really in closing out through this section here, as we look at it, at the end of the day, we're successful if our members had the supplies and the intelligence and the technology they needed to deliver the right care at the right time. You know, our aim through all of this hasn't changed. We're trying to be their partner behind the scenes, trying to be the eyes and the ears on the ground, trying to do all the work we can to ensure access to supplies, intelligence, technologies, so the members can focus on what they do best, which is the patient care. We're trying to remove barriers for them, trying to develop partnerships, investments, some unique solutions to quickly respond to their needs when they do come up. And in the answer to your specific question here, trying to enable members to stay ahead of that second wave, right? The things that we developed early on, that new technology, and we can now leverage that coupled with those principles of supply chain resiliency, right? Going through all the categories, identifying the hotspots, keeping on it, and all the lessons learned from wave one. The intent real is to help them be more prepared for a second wave now, but again, permanently, structurally, for any future pandemics or global supply disruptions. What we intend to really bake in all of the lessons learned here into permanent structural changes to help make our supply chain overall more resilient going forward.
Wonderful. Well, David, I just want to say thank you again so much for your time and thoughtful insights today. It truly has been such a pleasure speaking with you about this.
Absolutely. And thank you. It's great to get the message out of the work our great healthcare providers are doing and what role we can play in helping them do their job. So thank you very much.
Of course, and I totally agree. I also want to say thank you to our listeners for tuning in. You can find more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.